This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Devil's Den horror. A mom and a dad both slaughtered trying to protect their little daughters from the hiking trail killer. This is the FBI joins in the manhunt. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
Be advised, this just occurred at Devil's Den. Units still en route attacked a male and a female on Devil's Den hiking trail and then took off in a small black sports car with tape over the plate. And we suspect the suspect to have injuries due to the witness seeing the suspect.
Striking fear and every parent's heart. I just got back from taking the twins hiking. These two parents with their two little girls slaughtered at the Devil's Den State Park. As we go to air, a major update in the search for the perp that allegedly murdered a mom and dad on a popular hiking trail. Straight out to Crime Stories investigative reporter Sydney Sumner. What happened?
Arkansas State Police just released a possible photo of the suspect. Unfortunately, it's from behind. So we're just seeing the back of his head. He's standing on what looks like the edge of a cliff looking out over an overlook. And the description matches what they have been putting out there. He's wearing long black pants, a long sleeve black shirt. It looks like there's a design on the black of the shirt. It looks like it's a red square with blue filling the border. He's carrying a black backpack and what looks like a duffel bag, and his baseball cap is a light tan. He does appear to have sandy blonde or light brown hair. ASP didn't give us much information on where they got this photo. Maybe another hiker on the trail who just happened to catch the suspect in this position, and it's now zoomed in a better photo. So we're unsure of where exactly they got this, but just so unfortunate that it doesn't have his face.
The parents were attacked and murdered with the children present. With the children present. Why? Why attack these two loving parents? Again, with me, an all-star panel, straight out to Danette Sosa. She is joining us from Devil's Den there in Arkansas, formerly KNWA. Nanette, thank you for being with us. What do we know at this hour?
As far as the park is concerned, all the trails are closed here at Devil's Den, Devil Den's State Park. The police and FBI has now helped in this search. Extra caution has been taken. More patrol is on scene. However, we're only allowed through the exterior of the park. As you can see, there are two entrances. This is one entrance. You see the sign behind me, and then there's another more toward the north end of this park.
Nanette, did you just tell me there are only two entrance exits?
It's a highway that runs through here. When I say ingress and egress, or entrances and exits, so you have a main highway. You come off, you have an option to come off the main interstate, which is Interstate 49. Then you take a smaller highway, 74, then that will connect you to two highways here toward this particular park, which is Highway 220 or the Highway 174. So those are the two, and they can loop around and you can go on or off through those highways.
Right. Okay, that's important. I'm gathering that there are only two entrance exits, formal entrance and exits. But let me go straight out, guys. Joining me at the scene, Devil's Den State Park, now to an expert, Chris Adams, swamp survival expert, environmental educator. You can find him at Turtle Man on Facebook. Renowned survivalist. Chris, you have studied the terrain. And when I was asking Annette Sosa, are there only two entrances and exits? The reason I'm asking that, obviously, is because I want to find out who was the perp. And if he did exit, those are the two formal entry and exits, right? If he was by car, that's where we're going to get an ID on him. However, as you know from working at multiple state parks and some of them extremely, extremely tough terrain, you can walk in and out of a state park practically anywhere, right, Chris Adams?
If you know how to get in and out of a place, you can get in and out fairly easy.
Let's go back to that last shot where it was describing the terrain. Guys, you are seeing the entrance and exit, and it looks pretty idyllic, but the terrain is actually very, very difficult. Chris Adams, familiar with this terrain, describe it for me, Chris. This guy, if he did not leave through one of the formal entry and exits, which we believe he did, but we don't know that, what would he be up against now? Crooked, steep, no through trucks, RV trailers, only certain lengths can go in because of the terrain. Tell me about the terrain, Chris Adams.
Well, unlike my home, it is anything but flat. I mean, there's rock formations, there's caverns, there's creeks, wooded areas, even waterfalls. You know, that's the perfect area for disaster if you're walking through there and roll an ankle. I mean, you've got to know the terrain to be able to navigate the terrain. And this is not easy terrain to navigate by any means.
I'm glad you said that, Chris Adams. Joining me now, Ron Bateman, former sheriff at Anne Arundel County in Maryland, former homicide and undercover narc. You know, Ron, you're especially equipped for today because you studied and worked the Rachel Morin hiker trail murder. And what Chris Adams just said is extremely important. Did this guy know the area, much like Delphi, where Abby and Liberty were murdered on a local trail? Nobody would know about it unless you were from there. I suspect this guy knew the terrain really well. And like in the case of Rachel Morin that we were just showing on the Ma and Pa Trail, that guy lay in wait. That's what I think about this guy. Why do I care? Because maybe somebody saw him. Weigh in. What do you think about this perp lying in wait? A mother and a father dead, leaving behind three girls, one a teen, and two itty-bitty children, little, to grow up without mom and dad. What do you think, Ron?
It's horrible. And that's the first thing I thought of when I read this case about Rachel Morin's case. There's so many ways to get in and out of that woods to the Ma and Pa Trail, as it is for this situation here. Yeah, there might be two formal ways in and out, but I'm sure there's numerous ways. Like Chris just said, if you know the terrain, you're going to get in and get out. So I'm sure this guy knew where he was going and knew what he planned on doing, and then carried out his act.
And the point of that, Andrew Lewis is joining me, a high-profile lawyer, partner, Searcy Law, former felony prosecutor. Andrea, the point is, I'm on to finding this guy. I think, A, he knew the terrain really well, like Chris Adams is pointing out. I think he lay in wait, which gives me a bead on who may have seen him. What time did he get there? And why did he identify these two? You know, it's really rare, and you've tried a lot of cases, as have I, for one person to take on two adults. And he leaves the children. The children live. They go running, screaming at the top of their lungs. They're witnesses. Do I like putting children on the stand? No, I don't. Do you do it when you have to? Yes, you do. But for one guy to take on two adults, very peculiar. And I believe he had to know the terrain, Andrea.
Nancy, you're exactly right. And if you look at the photographs of the husband and father, he does not appear to be a relatively small man. So this guy, not only did he know what he was doing, not only was he there prepared, but he took on somebody that likely had some force and ability to fight back. Now, you bring up a very good point, right? Which is, what was the motive here? And two, were the parents the intended target? We know he certainly intended to kill them, but was he actually after the two young girls, similar to a Delphi type situation where he may have been actually looking for young girls to prey upon? We don't know yet, but this whole thing is very unusual and absolutely a horrific crime.
Angela Lewis, you say something like that and you expect everybody to just go to sleep tonight, put their head on the pillow and have sweet dreams? Now, we've heard over and over, Andrew, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong at all, because what we keep hearing is they died, mom and dad, dead on a hiking trail. And we keep hearing trying to protect their daughters. That had to come from somewhere. we're not hearing they died because they were robbed, or they died because, like Rachel Morin, she was brutally sex attacked on the Ma and Pa Trail. We're not hearing any of that, but we are hearing they died trying to protect their daughters. And that brings in what you just said, a blood-curdling thought that the perp was trying to get the girls, and the parents fought back and told the girls to run, like any parent would do, Andrea.
You know, and Nancy, is horrible and just unfathomable as it is to really picture that. It fits what we're seeing here. Because what we know, whether it be from witnesses or maybe even the girls themselves, is that they're reporting that he was injured. So certainly if mom and dad know that this predator is coming after these young girls, they're going to fight for not only their own lives, but also for their children. And you can certainly see a circumstance where the parents injure him, tell the girls to run, as you just noted. And that would really explain exactly what we're hearing from investigators. Now, only time will tell. Certainly there are other motives, but that is certainly a chilling one that investigators will have to rule out.
Dr. Jeff Gardier is joining us. You know him well. We have been analyzing cases together since, I know for a fact, 1997. Clinical psychologist, professor at Touro College of Osteopathic Medicine, called America's psychologist. Dr. Jeff, you and I have studied so many cases. And when we were covering a case together at Court TV, we talked about parents that tell their children, that turn and attack the attacker and tell the children, run. And the more we're analyzing this case, the more that's becoming apparent. The two little girls did that. They ran, Dr. Jeff. And I think it is a child this young, anyway, impulse to stay with the parents. Even though the parents are getting slaughtered, they'll stay right there. They might scream, they might run around, but they won't leave unless they're told, run. And that is what parents are told to tell, they're instructed to tell their children if the family's under attack. I told my children that when they were little, and I still tell them that. If anything happens, run. Leave your father and I, leave me, and run and go get help. In other words, that's get right to safety. Do you think that's what happened, Dr. Jeff?
There is quite that possibility, Nancy, and you're absolutely right. When we tell our kids to run, it's for their own safety, but it's also to get help. And what we're seeing here is there is the possibility that this killer, whether premeditated or not, was an individual with this kind of struggle going on, who was acting with intense emotional state, rage or frustration, and that was also very scary to the children. But that impulse of the parents to protect their children by any means, of course, is admirable and what we want to see in parents. They sacrifice their lives, it seems here.
I want to go back to our special guest, Chris Adams, aka Turtle Man, who is a wildlife survivalist. Chris, we are learning that the little girls said that they ran until they couldn't hear their mom screaming anymore. Now, it was, and Annette Sosa will jump in if I've got this wrong, it was about a mile to the visitor center. What does that mean? The perp could have been watching them, could have followed them in and tailed them for a mile. But more importantly, these two little girls ran for a mile. Two little girls ran, under the age of 10, ran for a mile in this terrain, Chris, hearing their mother screaming. And we believe they were running downhill over all the rocks and the ups and the downs and the cracks in the surface. What would that have been like for little children in this terrain running?
Firstly, that's horrific and not only so unnerving, considering I've worked, you know, in wildlands all across the southern part of Georgia here. But the terrain in that type of area, I mean, it cuts, and I can only imagine, you know, an adult trying to do that. But two children, their legs are smaller. They're not getting enough, you know, windage running like that. They're wearing themselves out, tripping, stumbling, falling. I mean, it would cut them up pretty bad, or at least bruise them up. And in the temperatures like it's been, the highs out there have been in the mid to lower 90s. And I can't imagine what the humidity has been like, but any amount of time running in that heat, it'd wear a little child out very easily.
Right now, the FBI joining in the search. I want this guy found. I want him brought to justice. You don't think these two little girls are going to hear their mother's screams for the rest of their lives every time they go to bed? They will.
We're all sweeping the trail, me, and I've got a maintenance person with me, interpreters with first aid kits trying to locate the family.
Hear yells calling for help. We're hiding down.
10-4, we're hearing them too towards the end of the lower part of the Devil's End Trail. Try to relay to the office that we found the victims down here. They're on the lower Devil's End Trail. I've got two bodies.
Authorities believe Arkansas mom and dad fought for their daughter's lives in a brutal attack in Devil's Den State Park that leaves both parents dead.
We are live at Devil's Den State Park. The slaughter of a mother and father, we've been told, protecting their own children. Joining us there at Devil's Den, Nanette Sosa, investigative reporter, but also with us, Crime Stories investigative reporter, Sydney Sumner. I'm hoping, based on what we've heard, that the perp was, in fact, injured. Why do we think that? Is there a glimmer of hope that we've got the perp's blood or DNA, be it skin, blood, anything?
Well, Nancy, we have very little information on what exactly happened to these parents, to this perpetrator. So we have some reports from 911 operators who took the call from police dispatch radio that one of these little girls saw their father stabbed by this suspect. So we don't know exactly what they saw, but I think police are on this theory that the suspect had a knife, he attacked these parents, and those parents were protecting their children, and they were not going to go down without a fight and make sure that this perpetrator did not attack their two little girls. So I think police believe that this suspect may have defensive wounds from the parents who were trying to fight him off.
Be on the lookout for a white male suspect wearing black gloves, sunglasses, dark colored pants. According to witness, direction of travel was, quote, went across a bridge leaving Devil's Den and stayed on the highway, end quote.
Okay, this is what we know about the perp, what he looked like, we believe. White male, black gloves, sunglasses, dark pants, long sleeve shirt, rolled up. Interesting. The only way his face is covered is with sunglasses. We're not hearing about a hat. We've also heard he had dark blonde to light brown hair. Learning more at this hour. Listen.
First responders hear screams and calls for help. By the time they reach the victims on the trail, it's clear the victims are deceased. No sign of their attacker. Officers quickly clear the trail, speaking with hikers as they exit the park to piece together what happened. Several hikers remember passing the family and many others on the trail, but a few point out there was only one person they saw alone on the trail that day, a medium-billed white man wearing dark clothes, a ball cap, and sunglasses with dark blonde or light brown hair.
Suspect is going to be a white male wearing white gloves, sunglasses, a dark colored pants, and a dark colored tank top. Took off in a small black sports car with taped over plates. Direction of travel, went across the bridge, leaving Devil's Den, and stayed on the highway.
Curious, I'm hearing an inconsistency. Some reports state that the perp had on a long sleeve shirt with the sleeves rolled up, and there we're hearing police dispatch state that he had on a tank top. Very curious that there would be a knife attack in the kind of heat that Chris Adams is describing, wearing a tank top. Let's think that through. Is that how he was injured? Joining me, an all-star panel, but now to Dr. Priya Banerjee, board-certified forensic pathologist, anatomic pathologist. Dr. Priya, thank you for being with us. Dr. Priya, we're told that the perp was injured. Mm-hmm. There's got to be evidence of that. It's got Absolutely. To be blood. It's got to be. Explain, how would we know, looking at the victim's bodies, that the perp had been injured?
Great question. I think that's where the money's at. This is a stabbing up close and personal. And I mean, just breaks my heart as a girl mom too, of a 10-year-old, that they witnessed this. So this was not just a single stab. It sounds like a very violent altercation. So we need to look at the victim's hands, look for defensive wounds, and what's the state of their nails, if there's any debris under them, and rush that evidence. That is going to be where the DNA is. You know, they didn't give up. They fought back to save their kids. And really, that's where any sort of DNA is going to be. Even I've even swabbed hands at autopsy to try to get touch DNA or residual, any blood drops. You look to see if there's any vertical blood drops, like with the spatter pattern, to make sure and see if potentially you can identify whether it's victim's blood or what I'm hoping is injured assailant's blood on clothing, whatnot. And that's where the money will be for the DNA.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
To Nanette Sosa joining us from Devil's Den State Park. We are also learning that the two little girls, just 7 and 9, who are running for their lives, say the perp stabbed their dad and their mom yelled at them to run as far and fast as they can for help. And they heard the mom asking, "Why are you doing this?" and start to scream.
Exactly, Nancy. That is what was reported, with the mother in distress telling and trying to save her girls, telling them to run. And when they did run, they made it for their life about a mile away from where the attack happened. Reports state that the parents were found on the walking trail.
Dr. Jeff Gardier with us, a clinical psychologist and professor. Dr. Jeff, the brazen nature of the attack. And I'm going to circle back to Ron Bateman, same thing in the Rachel Morin case. Dr. Jeff, we know that there were other people on the trail, other adults. In fact, these two little girls, 7 and 9, were running. They could hear their mom screaming in the background. They saw their dad get stabbed. As of now, they have not identified the perp. So it's not someone known to the little girls. But if there were other people on the trail, this guy has balls the size of coconuts. I mean, he's on the trail, can get caught, and he attacks with a knife anyway. The girls say they saw dad getting stabbed. That's where we're getting the idea that this was a stabbing, which, as you heard earlier from Dr. Priya, is up close and personal as she describes it. It's a whole other mindset to stab somebody dead. It's not like a sniper in the distance taking a long shot. This is somebody fighting with you, grappling with you, screaming, trying to get away, trying to attack you, and you keep stabbing repeatedly. And the brazen nature of doing this on a trail where there's a lot of people.
So this is a person who probably waited to make sure that the trail was empty and only the parents and the children were there. That's number one. Number two, the fact, Nancy, as you so, you know, aptly said here, this was with a knife and not a gun. So as Dr. Priya would agree, I would think that this is about a very personal attack, even if he didn't know the individuals, someone who wants to violate a family in every way possible by striking terror into their hearts and that of the children. And one last point here, that the father perhaps was stabbed first, but the mother may not have just been fighting off this individual, but also trying to keep that individual from chasing after the children. And therefore, whatever fighting she was doing was to protect herself, but at the same time, to also try to contain this individual long enough for the children to get away.
What's supposed to be a memorable family hike ends in a brutal tragedy when the bodies of a mom and dad are suddenly discovered in Arkansas State Park.
As soon as this went public late last night, social media went wild, and we're learning a lot. Listen.
Social media accounts are flooded with comments and accounts from visitors to Devil's Den State Park on Saturday, and one mother is convinced her family passed both the Brinks and their possible killer on Devil's Den Trail. The mom says she and her five children ran into a family of four at a steep rock wall and exchanged pleasantries with the parents as they helped their daughters down. Not long after, the mom decided to turn back and ran into someone else at the same rock wall. This man was not interested in small talk and did not meet her eyes when she said excuse me on her family's behalf. The mother noticed that the man was also dressed oddly for the hot weather, wearing a dark, long-sleeved shirt.
Straight out to Chris, a.k.a. Turtle Man Adams, survivalist expert. You can find him on Facebook, Turtle Man Chris Adams. Chris, we heard at first that the pert was wearing a tank top, which would have been appropriate in this weather, as you pointed out. But why would you expose your bare arms, neck, and chest in that way for a stabbing? Then social media finds out about the murders and goes wild. A woman actually writes in that she turned back and she sees this guy wearing a dark, long sleeve shirt. And that struck her as odd, given the weather. Explain, what would a normal hiker be wearing at Devil's Den?
An average hiker anywhere, really, at this time of year in the summer, would be wearing those fishing net shirts, you know, breathable. You want your skin covered for the most part. Down in those canyons and caverns, if you're in broad sunlight, it can get brutal. But some will wear things like tank tops and things of that nature. But my take on the whole hoodie thing is perhaps he had the hoodie on, took it off, and he was seen in a tank top, or vice versa. If he attacked them with a tank top on, he could have well just put it on afterwards, the hoodie, to cover up any wounds on his arms.
You know, to Ron Bateman joining us, former sheriff at Anne Arundel County, Maryland, who extensively investigated the Rachel Morin case, and we keep bringing up Rachel Morin, a mother of five, just like this mother is a mother of two. She was hiking solo, and I think, Ron, it was early in the morning when she was hiking. That said, her boyfriend realized she didn't come home in time and starts searching, finds her car at the trailhead, and then discovers her body. Of course, he became state suspect number one. It's the love interest. He finds the body. It wasn't him. It was a perp, an illegal immigrant in this country who had already attacked people, a young girl in L.A. in her own home. That said, Ron Bateman, in this case, did you hear what Chris Adams was saying? The perp, first believed to be wearing a tank top, was on this hot trail, according to the eyewitness who went back with her children. He wouldn't do any small talk. They walked past him, and the mom went, excuse me, on behalf of her whole family. He wouldn't speak, wouldn't look her in the eyes, and he was dressed neck to wrist to foot. Right? That's not normal.
No, that's not normal at all. And you know, it goes into the subject of, was he lying in wait, which we can talk about extensively because of other things that we know. But if I could real quick go back
to
something.
Do it. Because you know what? I want to hear, if you think he was lying in wait, I want to hear all the reasons why, because that will help me identify a suspect.
Okay, great. So let's talk about what something Dr. Priya said real quick. I can't let it go. Yes, about the DNA underneath the fingernails, the skin. Yes, that is super important. I investigated a double murder involving the suspect using a knife in a wooded area in the past. And one of the things when you're processing a scene outdoors is extremely difficult because you don't have area where you're going to find fingerprints. But what you do have, you a lot of times it's not unusual during a knife attack.
Stop. Ron Bateman. Hey, you can't just drop a bomb on us like that. A fact bomb. You're totally correct, but explain to everybody why an outdoor scene is so hard to process. I mean, in Rachel Morin, you found a pool of blood near the body, and she had been raped, brutally sex assaulted. So we got DNA matching up to an unknown perp. But it's really hard to process an outdoor scene. Explain why. What, are you going to get a fingerprint off a tree? It's hard.
Exactly. Outdoor scenes are so difficult, especially if it ends up raining during the course of your processing. But it did in this case. But what you're looking for in a scene on the in the outdoors are a footprints. If you have a, some kind of soil that's strong enough to hold a footprint. But in the case of a stabbing, it's not unusual for the assailant to be injured because of some kind of struggle that took place. So therefore, you're really looking, honing in for blood. And they may have found blood away from the bodies as the suspect was fleeing the area. That's what I would suspect is probably going to happen in this case because Clinton Brink is a pretty big dude, and he's going to put up a fight for his family, especially with a knife. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the suspect's injured and that was found as a part of the processing of the scene.
Okay, Bateman, everything you just said is correct, except, and it's still correct, but the likelihood they're going to get a footprint on a trail, slim to none. Everything else, I'm down with it. I mean, Chris Adams, how are you going to get a footprint off a trail like this unless it's been wet and you can actually see, for instance, the tread on the bottom of the shoe? Otherwise, it's just not going to happen.
Even for a good tracker, it's going to be difficult. You know, the park said there were very few visitors the last few days, but that doesn't mean there wasn't an influx of people a week before. I don't know if it's rained or if it hasn't, but those footprints set pretty quickly. Now, off trail, you may be able to find one much easier. Your average crowd is going to stick to that trail, but this all happened on a trail. So it's hard to determine how you're going to find that exact footprint, in my opinion.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
You know, Andrea Lewis is joining us, high-profile lawyer, Searcy Law Firm, and for my purposes, former felony prosecutor who has prosecuted a lot of cases, including homicide cases. Andrea Lewis, there's something you brought up earlier, and Ron Bateman just brought it up. You know, we're talking about the Rachel Morin case, and I've got other similar cases like the serial killer Israel Keyes, who hunted people that were RVers and hikers all across the country, and I've got him on tape talking about it, complete, total perv. That said, they would pick on people that were less powerful or less cunning than themselves. There's wackadoodle right there. That's Israel Keyes. He would specifically go to hiking trails, RV camps, tent camps, dispersed camping areas, and he would get people and murder them at their weakest moments. But Andrea, you brought this up, as did Bateman, and in Morin, who did the perp attack, a lone female, unarmed. Andrea, you brought it up. This guy is big. Clinton Brink? That's a big guy. Hey, control room, do you mind putting up a picture of him? You can't really tell in a lot of these pictures how big he is, because like that, you know, I got a close-up. Oh, and another thing, when I go back to Jeff Gardier, these photos are just breaking my heart. They're not professional photos. They're happy photos taken by them at some of the happiest moments of their lives. Like, I look through my phone and I see all these candid moments with David and the twins, and it's just like the happiest moments of our lives. Look at that. Look at that. It's like the ultimate American family out with their children before everybody has to go back to school, on a hike, thinking they were doing a fun thing, making memories, as I like to say. But Andrea, this perp took, that's a good one. He's almost as big as Woody, right? This is a big dude, right? And the perp took on not only him, but the mom.
Yes, Nancy. And, you know, bringing up Israel Keyes, that's interesting because he was, as you noted, he was also someone who waited for people in very isolated scenarios and isolated scenes. He was someone who preyed upon those who likely couldn't fight back. So it makes us wonder, you know, we know that he goes into the related area, even in this case. He's armed. I presume he's assuming that those who are out for a lovely family afternoon with their small children are not going to come to the trail heavily armed. And then he looks at that as an opportunity to attack, which is obviously what happened here. Now, to your point about the size, I agree with you. And that strikes me as very odd that one may consider that he may have been thinking, okay, dad is going to be so caught up in trying to protect the family, this and that, likely not be prepared. We don't know, maybe he's wearing a backpack, he's got a bunch of things in his hands, who knows? But maybe he then thinks he can catch him off guard if he's armed and sneaks up behind him or something of that nature. But it is a very strange crime. And the first thing that came to mind as we were talking about before is maybe he sees the beautiful young girls come through with the family, becomes fixated on them and says, look, I'm going to do what I got to do to take out these loving parents in order to get what he ultimately desired.
You know, I'm just thinking this through, Dr. Jeff. First of all, I want to talk to you about who is this perp willing to take on a big dude? The husband? The wife? What is motivating him? We're not hearing anything about a sex attack on mom. We're not hearing anything about a robbery. So, of course, the state, as you know, doesn't have to prove motive at trial. You never have to go bang around into the defendant's head to figure out, wow, what were they thinking? You don't have to prove that. But as a practical matter, Dr. Jeff, a jury wants to hear motive. Like in Brian Koberger, right? That piece of crap. May he rot in hell. People were hung up at the get-go. Why would this guy, a PhD, go into the home at 3-4 o'clock in the morning and murder four people without a sex attack, without a robbery? He didn't even know them. So it would be hard for some people on the jury, not me, but some people to piece together that you don't need a motive or that you will never know the motive. But I'm looking for a motive because it may help me identify who is this guy. For instance, was he a neighbor? And he had been, they hadn't been living there for long. They had just moved to the jurisdiction. And was this a neighbor that saw the little girl, say, like in Shasta and Dylan Groney in the above ground pool and went, hey, I want that little girl. Did he follow them? Did he know them? Was he lying in wait for just the right little girl to try to steal? I mean, who is this guy? Give me some insight, Dr. Jeff.
Well, I think that this is a person who not only may have wanted to violate the little girls. We still don't know that, of course, but that's a theory. But this is a person who wanted
to
violate.
Why are you using words like that?
Well, this is a person.
Why are you saying violate? You make it sound like he had a traffic citation, violated right of way. If that's his motive, he wants to rape the little girl. Put it out there. Yeah. I don't have time for niceties. This is not high tea at Windsor Castle, Jeff.
I totally understand, Nancy. But I use the word violation because it's more than just a possible sex attack, but a complete attack on the entire family. This is someone who may have had intense hatred or resentment towards family structures. You asked for a motivation, and I'm giving you one. This is a person, perhaps, who came from a background like Koberger, where he had, you know, situations where he felt that he was being treated like a piece of crap or didn't have a happy family. And therefore, this violation of the whole family structure, it is an abomination. He may not have only wanted to destroy these little girls, but to destroy the entire family. That is a real perversion.
Medic 4, Strickland first responders, stage for police, assault, possible stabbing, Devil's Den State Park. Washington County received a call from the visitor center. Two children are there. They advised that their parents were assaulted. One was possibly stabbed. The parents are missing.
These lines, this just occurred at Devil's Den. Unit still en route, attacked a male and a female on Devil's Den hiking trail, and then took off in a small black sports car with tape over the plate. And we suspect the suspect to have injuries due to the witness seeing the suspect stab one of them.
We are live at Devil's Den State Park, Arkansas. A mother and a father in the prime of their life with their two little girls. The two little girls, ages 7 and 9, with mommy and daddy on a hike before everybody has to go back to school. Both of these parents, nurses. The parents are dead, stabbed dead. At this hour, there is a manhunt for the perp. The two little girls, mom yells to them to run and get away, and they do. They see their father getting stabbed dead, and they hear their mother screaming. With me, an all-star panel, straight out to Nanette Sosa, standing by at Devil's Den State Park. One, we have a composite sketch. Two, the FBI has gotten involved. And three, a vehicle was spotted. This is such malice aforethought. There was duct tape or electrical tape over at least part of the tag number. I mean, this guy put a lot of thought into this. Let's start with a composite sketch. Nanette Sosa, what do you know?
The composite sketch shows a white male with a ball cap, and his eyes are set close together. His face looks unshaven. It's a very somber look, how it's drawn out, how it's sketched. And then the shirt that he's wearing is more like a sweatshirt type of shirt for this sketch.
Putting together a sketch like this is extremely laborious. Ron Bateman with us. Remember, we got the sketch of the Rachel Morin, that's case you investigated, perp, and it was dead on as best as we could get it. And he was caught on cam, but only his back was caught on cam when he attacked a little girl out in California, unrelated to the Rachel Morin case. Ron Bateman, former sheriff in Arundel County, Maryland. Ron, how do you make a composite sketch?
Hopefully we have witnesses, adult witnesses, because your two juveniles are going to be extremely upset, and probably their view of things are going to be skewed. But so hopefully we have some adults that are not emotionally involved in this, and we're able to give good, accurate descriptions of the suspect to allow such a very crisp, clean composite of this suspect. I like it.
Sydney Sumner, what do we know about the car?
We know the car is a 4-door black sedan. The word sports car was thrown around frequently in initial reports, and a 911 operator has confirmed that with other calls, she's kind of ruled out that it was a muscle car. So we know it wasn't like an American Mustang, something of that sort. And this 911 operator, who has a special penchant for cars and types of cars, believes that it's probably a foreign car, an import. So we also heard at one point a 2012 Mazda, but police ruled out that car as the suspect vehicle because it was still in the park as they were completing their investigation. So all we really have to go on is this 4-door black sedan, feels more like a sports car. And people who called about this car said that it was driving erratically when it left the park. Somebody said they felt like they were almost hit by this car when they reported it. They said it's very, very loud. That's one of the big commonalities. And the other one is that that license plate is covered in some kind of tape, electrical duct tape.
Black 4-door sedan. This is interesting. The license plate either fully or partially obscured by electrical or duct tape. I-70 or 220. Covering up part of the tag number with duct tape. You know what that tells me, Andrea Lewis? This ain't his first time at the rodeo. I mean, I wouldn't think, if I were going out for a hike, why would you cover up part of your tag number with duct tape? That's mens rea, malice aforethought, intent, and 10. Out the yin yang.
Yes, that is a huge piece of evidence here. That shows us there is no question this was premeditated. He was not going there for a hike. He was not going there to do any bird watching. This was a man who went to the park that day with one thing in mind. He's going to commit a crime. What was that crime? That's what we're trying to determine. Did he go there to initially rob someone, to unfortunately possibly get access to young children? Or was it, as it ended up, to murder two innocent parents? We don't yet know, but what we do know is he put thought into this. And to your point, Nancy, which is an excellent point, people who are this brazen generally have done this before. You don't come up with this stuff on your first go round. This man knew what he was doing, and that says a lot.
Agree, disagree, Dr. Jeff Gardier, you're the psychologist.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We typically see that these types of individuals either follow or study these types of tactics or have done them before. The other thing about this tape that was used on the license plates, I suspect either he knew he would dump the car as quickly as possible because that would draw attention to the car on a highway trying to obscure your license plates or pull off somewhere and then pull off the tape and then get back into the car.
Nanette Sosa, there are some reports that he was wearing gloves.
Yes, you're correct. Fingerless gloves at that, which would leave fingerprints. I would, and if he stabbed these husband and wife, so I would think there's some prints to be found somewhere, possibly. And also the couple, they were found on the trail.
On the trail. Rachel Moran was dragged off the trail. I mean, Chris Adams, you're the survivalist. Who goes hiking? And what I'm getting at, Chris, is that he had nefarious intent. Malicious intent going into this. He wasn't just on the trail and went, hey, I want to molest a little girl, and there one is. He went in with his tag obscured with duct tape, or some people call it electrical tape, and he was wearing gloves, and it's 90 degrees. Are you sure about that, Chris Adams? Long sleeves, dark long pants, a dark baseball cap, sunglasses, and gloves. To go hiking up a hill in 95-degree temperatures, Chris Adams?
As someone who hikes a bunch of trails, that would be a person I'd immediately keep an eye on if it was anywhere near me. It already sounds suspicious. It doesn't sound like an average hiker. This was somebody with intent to do harm to someone, as far as I'm concerned. Your average hikers don't dress like that, and they definitely don't act like that.
Tip line, the Arkansas State Police, 479-751-6663. Repeat, 479-751-6663. I can't stress enough how much we need citizen sleuths. Gabby Petito's case would never have been solved if Red, Blue, and Methane, I believe was their handle online, did not spot her white Ford Transit in dispersed parking. Her body, well, what was left of it, was found a good distance away from that van. But if they hadn't seen it and reported it, we would never know what happened to Gabby Petito. Dispersed camping is there are no electrical hookups, no bathrooms, no nothing. You are out in the wild. She would never have been found. And we've been told that she was identified originally by her sweatshirt, not by her body, because animals had already attacked it. That's how much we need citizen sleuths. Not just people on the trail that may have seen or observed something we don't know yet, but people regarding that car. It was loud. What does that mean? Don't know. Could mean any number of things. We know it was a four-door black sedan. Some people thought it was a Mazda. And we know the tag was obscured with black duct tape, indicating malicious intent along with what he was wearing. These parents died trying to save their two little girls. This guy is on the loose. Tip line 479-751-6663. A brazen attack. And now police are looking for the vehicle and they're scouring 2,500 acres of wilderness. One quick question to Nanette Sosa joining us from Devil's Den Park. Are there cams at the entry and exit? If he left in a vehicle and didn't leave on the from the perimeter of the park itself, we might have a shot at getting a good description of the car. Are there cams?
For the entrances and the exits here at Devil's Den regarding cameras where information could be picked up, they're not sure. The authorities here have not directly answered the question. It has been asked. I personally asked, but that has not been disclosed. You're looking at 2,500 acres, and in between the waterfalls, rock formations, you have 12 trails, you got campsites, cabins. The area is rural, and not just that, if you're on one of the trails, it's likely you don't even have cellular service. You can't even make a phone call. So there's that thought. But as far as cameras, that has not been officially disclosed. At least not to me.
And that is why we need you. The FBI has been brought in to help the Arkansas State Police. If you saw this vehicle, if you have a home or business cam, remember Alex Murdoch, another sack of crap that murdered his wife and son, Maggie and Paul, to cover up his own financial wrongdoings to the tune of millions of dollars he's stealing? He went down a rural road and he faked an attempt on his life to cover the fact that he is the killer. There were no cameras, but guess what? At the entrance of that rural road was a little Baptist church. And guess what they had? A camera. So any camera footage, we need it. Please help the Arkansas State Police. These little girls need to grow up knowing that we cared. We didn't just talk about it. We did something about it. 479-751-6663. And now we remember an American hero, Officer Diral Islam, NYPD, just 36, shot and killed at an office tower in Manhattan providing security. Leaves behind his wife, who is pregnant, and two little children. American hero, Officer Diral Islam. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.